Hello and welcome along to this week's RTE Rugby Podcast. Neil Tracy here with Bernard Jackman in the podcast studio and Johnny Holland on the line also. Fellas, I'll keep that intro brief because we have a rake of stuff to get through this week. Transfer silly season is in full flow. Might be a bit of a meandering podcast at times as well this week because there's a few topics that are overlapping between provinces and Ireland and Six Nations around the corner. But going to start with a very, very interesting report overnight from Liam Napier in the New Zealand Herald. Pressure is mounting on New Zealand rugby to instigate major changes to the All Blacks coaching team after a scathing internal review and with serious doubts hovering over Ardy Sevilla's future in black. And the story goes on. World-class loose forward Sevilla, who captained the All Blacks several times in Scott Barrett's injury absence last year, is among those to be seriously unhappy. Multiple sources have told the Herald that Sevilla is exploring discussions to stay on with Japanese club Kobe beyond this year, or join a European club, with Irish club Leinster believed to be a possible destination. Bernard, what about that for a Wednesday morning?
Well, he'd be another marquee signing, wouldn't he?
Is this
one of the best players in the world?
Is this a bit of kite flying from an agent, or?
Well, look, Leinster have potentially found this model where they can go high profile for a short period of time and have Jordy Barrett or Rico Ioane for the business end of the season. They look, from a season ticket holder fan's point of view, you'd love to have Ardy Sevilla playing in Ireland. I just don't know if it's, I would say that's more agent flying the kite, and there's lots of unrest in the All Blacks. It's going to be fascinating to see what they do or if they do anything, because this hasn't gone away. The bad boys from camp have been there for the last a year, and yeah, it'll be fascinating to see what the NZRU do.
Johnny, if there was any truth to it at all and Leinster were trying to put together something to bring Ardy Sevilla over to Ireland, it would be interesting to see what the reaction would be IRFU-wise from it, because like when you've had Snyman in the past, okay, it's a second row where they have needed a big, big, beefy second row in there. Even Rico Ioane and Jordy Barrett, they've been positions where you can say that maybe they might have needed that extra player as well. It does feel like back row is somewhere they're fairly well loaded on to begin with.
I think back row at the younger levels is something that has been talked about, but not at the senior level. You know, like they have their top four or five back rows, and I don't think they need a back row like Ardy Sevilla. But then again, everyone needs a back row like Ardy Sevilla. Like, he's that good. You know, Bernard's saying he's world class. He obviously is, like, you know. So if there was, I don't know, I think if you're in Leinster and there's a possibility you can get someone like that and you've got the money for him, you'd obviously take him. But like, I can't see how much do the RFU have a say in these signings at the moment. Like, probably a lot, don't they? So I don't know. I don't know how that's useful for Irish rugby at the moment, but if they can, you know, all power to them.
Yeah, just on Johnny's point, there has been a bit of a famine in terms of quality back rows coming through the underage system, but there's a kid that they brought in from South Africa last year, Josh Nell, who we haven't seen yet, but he's a very exciting prospect. So he's a little bit, he's obviously young, I think he's 19, but he's actually in the country now. It'd be fascinating to see when we start seeing him, and is he as good as the South African talent scouts felt he was, and they were gutted to lose him. And the other thing is, I think, asking what the RFU would do, I'd say Leinster won't get any massive help from the RFU short term because of what they did with Joey Carby, you know, the Joey Carby signing. I don't think that was very much the plan for the RFU. So you can go and do what you want in certain things, but it may come back to cost you a little bit later when you need a bit of a favour or a little bit of backing. So that's all going to be fascinating how that plays out.
Right. So you, gun to your head, if I was to say to you, is Ardy Sevilla playing in Leinster Blue next season, you'd probably say no. Let's bring in Joey Carberry then, because I was going to talk about it a bit later, but since you mentioned him, it's probably the nice time to bring it up. Looks like Leinster have won the race to bring him back, pipping Ulster to it. I think it had been, Ulster had seemed like the ideal destination almost for a while, but with Kieran Frawley heading over to Connacht next season, Leo Cullen wants a versatile backline option that can cover various positions. Obviously, he'll want to be playing out half himself a lot, but there's already a pretty competitive committee there between Harry Byrne and Sam Prendergast. So Joey Carberry, you'd be looking a lot at full back, a little bit in the centre as well as out half. What are your thoughts on that? If his goal is to get back into an Ireland setup, Is it a poor reflection of a system that he thinks potentially going into a three-way committee is the best way of doing it?
I suppose logically it's a big gamble for him. It's probably not the best use of resources for Irish rugby point of view. I can see why Leinster would want to get him back, because obviously he's a very talented player, and he did come from there, and they never seemed to get over. Leo didn't seem to get over the fact that he left, according to his comments last week, he left whatever he did 8-9 years ago. So it's a bit of a flex by Leinster to bring him back. I would say it's a very brave move by him, because it could end up costing him a chance of being the out half for Ireland if he doesn't get ahead of the two lads or doesn't get a significant amount of game time. The other side of it is, if you're Joey and you say, and you look at Harry and Sam and you say, I'm better than them, and you back yourself to go in and be number one, well then it's the dream move to make, because you actually take away, they take them out of it completely. You know, you block them by, and they won't have game time, because there is a fear amongst players that you have to do a little bit more in another province to oust the person, the jersey holder. So for example, maybe he felt that playing in Ulster and being part of that, and obviously Ulster making great strides, but the reality is whoever plays 10 for Leinster has an easier ride because of the quality players in front of him and around him, and maybe that's the thought process behind it. Or maybe he just wants to come home, maybe he just wants to be back. Obviously he has a house in Kildare, that's where he's from, and maybe he's decided
young family,
yeah. So like that, and that could be just a little part of it, it could be all of it, etc., or it could be little bits of all of the above. But yeah, it's a brave move by Leinster, and it's a brave move by him, because also it's not just the Joey stuff. If he's being promised game time at 10, or you're also then cutting Harry and Sam's game time as well. So it's a tricky one to balance. But I can see from Leinster's point of view, they want to have the best talent, and he certainly is a talented player who's now even more experienced than the one who left.
Johnny, on the personal stuff and how much that factors in, like from your experience being in those changing rooms, when maybe some of us on the outside are looking at these transfers, we look at, well, is the player earning more or less money at this new club or by staying at his current place, and how are his international chances affected? I think they seem to be like the only two sides of a coin that a lot of us seem to look at. From your own personal experience, how much do those... Well, being closer to home would be a lovely thing. You know, I've got a young family, or I don't have a family. How much of those things weigh into the transfer decisions players are making?
I do think they weigh in, yeah, because like sometimes you hear fellas going, oh, I'd never go there, or I'd never go here. So just because of an opportunity at a different club doesn't mean that the player will feel comfortable there. Like, you know, and maybe that's just fickle stuff from the outside. But I believe when Joey was playing in Munster, he was doing a lot of travelling back up home anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's not... That's what I'm told. So maybe he just is a homebird. Maybe he does miss his home province and home, you know. So like, there could be a lot to be said for that. And I think Leo's comments, like, you know, misquoting him here, but it was a lot to do with the fact that he's a homegrown player, you know. So you can't really give out about Leinster bringing home someone like Joey Carberry, because it literally is home, you know. So the only thing, like, you know, we talk about it in our own amateur domestic league, I suppose, in that, you know, when you're dealing with players and they say, oh, there's people in my position over there, you're trying to talk someone into taking the competition on directly, because it's the fastest way into the jersey. Like as Bernard said there, you know, if you beat Sam and Harry, like, you are number one in the country probably, or at least up there, you know. So sometimes you do have to take that on directly, and if he's going home, he's comfortable in the environment and he thinks he can have a crack off it, it's the fastest way back into being number one in a short space of time. Because, you know, I don't like talking about players' age, but at the same time, like, he's got a finite number of years here where he can make an impact until he becomes a squad player again, you know.
From a Leinster point of view, it's a very good signing, because you lose Frawley, you lose that versatility, you lose that talent, you lose the player who's had been exposed to a lot of big games, and you replace him. You replace him with someone of a similar profile. So
who can cover those positions.
Yeah, it's a very good piece of business by Leinster.
The other element as well is, like, when Ulster has been discussed, there's no guarantee he was walking into Ulster to be... And he was going to automatically be first choice out half as well. Jack Murphy's progressing very, very well there. And I don't know, maybe I'm just being devil's advocate here. Is there a part of him that was going, geez, I don't want to be going head to head with the head coach's son?
Yeah, well, possibly. Well, no, I think, yeah, apart from that, I think, as you say, Jack is showing really nice progress. He's got a great skill set.
In all seriousness, my point is probably like there was going to be competition. Yeah,
it wasn't a clear cut that we've no one else. You know what I mean? Jack is, and by the end of the season, Jack could be even further enhanced there. But I do think, from an Ulster point of view, they obviously still need a 10. And I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't go for Josh Ioane. Now, whether the RFU will allow.
He still has a year left.
Yeah, but these things are like, you know, Ulster went for Frawley, lost out on him. Mm-hmm. You know, Frawley won't want any, the RFU won't want any major competition to Frawley at 10 in Connacht. Connacht may want to use that foreign player spot elsewhere. Mm-hmm. It's like we said with Munster, we talked about John Klein. Munster now have a foreign player spot they didn't think they had, mm-hmm. you know, that they weren't planning to have. And again, where will Clayton use that?
Mm-hmm. And I see reports of that. Go, John.
Sorry, just on that. It's funny if you look at whatever social media stands for, because a lot of Ulster opinion would say Joey Carberry had his chance. Like, so that'd be very interesting. But I also think you should take a player of that quality. I thought Ulster was the perfect spot for him. Like, Connacht obviously had an opportunity, then Kieran Frawley took that, but I thought Ulster was the same thing. And when you think about the RFU and how they're trying to manage their resources, and I think it looks like they're trying to do that a bit more, move players around the provinces and make everyone stronger. But then from Joey Carberry's perspective, like, everyone kind of forgets, we talk about the Jack Crowley, Sam Prendergast situation, and again, I don't really want to go into that massively, but like, Jack went on an Emerging Ireland tour and came back and all of a sudden was pushed into Munster's starting spot, which, rightly or wrongly, like, I probably would have backed it, to be fair. But Joey was sitting in Munster going, "You haven't backed me at all, like, and there are a few probably haven't helped me here either." You know, he had been injured, you know, but I'm sure from the player's perspective, he'll be thinking, "I'm not doing what anyone else wants. I'm doing what Joey Carberry wants, because this is my career and I don't think I've gotten a fair crack in Ireland in the last couple of years of his career, you know."
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what way that goes, although it does feel inevitable. We'll have confirmation on it at some point soon that he's heading back to Leinster. Staying on Leinster, and kind of Leinster adjacent for now, but just as relevant from an Irish point of view, the loose head injuries. Andrew Porter out with a calf injury. Paddy McCarthy went off at the weekend with an ankle. Looks like both of those players are now real Six Nations doubts, at least for the start of the Championship for Ireland in Paris and London in the first 3 weeks. So you've Jack Boyle on his way back from a shoulder injury. Then you're looking at Tom O'Toole potentially crossing over, which is something Andy Farrell has looked at before. But the issue there is he actually has looked quite good at tight head for Ulster this season, probably the best he's looked for a couple of years. Finlay Beelam has also swapped over before for Ireland, but he has a knock at the moment and is going to be out for two more weeks. And then you're Michael Milne, who won his caps during the summer and who's been on fringes of Ireland squads. Jeremy Lochman, who has a few caps but hasn't been seen in a few years' time. And then maybe some complete wild cards, like someone up at Sam Crean at Ulster, who's just had a good, productive start to the season. Either way, this is an opportunity. This weekend and next weekend, time for someone to go out there and just seriously put your hand up and make a statement.
Yeah, it's phenomenal bad luck. I think Paddy McCarthy could be out for 5 or 6 months, is the rumour. Andrew Porter could be out for 2 months, 3 months.
The soundings from Leinster aren't positive on either, anyway. No. That's all we know so far.
No, certainly my understanding is that they're both going to miss the Six Nations, Porter potentially get back for the very end of it. But I think Jack Boyle isn't too bad.
There's hope he could be available this weekend.
If he's not available this weekend, he should be available for Paris. But it's a little bit like you love to see players get a chance. But like, even take JJ Kenny, he got his chance and he's keeps showing improvement. But he got his chance in a URC game. Like, this, now you're talking about someone getting a chance
in a Six Nations game in Paris.
Paris away on a Thursday night. So, but here, whatever it is, someone has an opportunity to take it. But from a John Fogle, like, let's not forget our last scrum performance was South Africa, and you know, he obviously would want to just get back on the horse. Have a decent scrum performance, and now the fates are seem to be working against him, because a lot of his prime beef are going to be out, and it'd be fascinating to see how they react to that. Obviously, you can go, you know, Michael Milne or Jack Boyle or potentially, like, would they be tempted to go for a, you know, a Dennis Buckley, Peter Dooley, just emergency for one, like an experience.
What a story that would be. Dennis Buckley gets his cap in 2026. Yeah, it genuinely would be a fantastic story.
It'd be amazing. Just in terms of having an out and out, like a really experienced scrummage in Loosehead, for what's obviously going to be an onslaught there. But yeah, horrific. And Paddy McCarthy was playing so well as well. Porter, obviously, certainly soundings are there. They're looking at transitioning him across to being a tight head, not just on an emergency basis, but potentially to help prolong his career, to maybe get the spotlight off him from a scrummaging point of view. And because obviously we have like Paddy McCarthy and Jack Boyle and Michael Milne pushing through.
Johnny, it's that thing, you know, use the same word for crisis and opportunity. It is obviously going to be incredibly tough going to Paris without those two. I am genuinely really, really excited to actually see who gets the opportunity and how it goes. Because this is an incredibly settled Irish team and we're always talking about we need to try find ways of getting players in. Like, the harsh reality is these are the moments when you have to just take the chances on players and put them in and see do they sink or swim. I'm really, really excited and maybe a little bit worried to see how it all goes.
Yeah, I think the whole thing in professional rugby is that players aren't as far off as what they may seem until they get the opportunity. But I suppose Paris away, a big scrummaging side, you know, that's a little bit different, especially when you're losing two world-class props, at least. You know, I think that's a big difference. And from a coaching perspective, that would make you very nervous because, yes, you want to back the next guy in, but God, that's such a... Sorry, I don't want to say drop-off because that's quite insulting, but I suppose objectively it is, you know, and... Mm-hmm. Andy Farrell seems to be very good at just bridging that gap and finding someone or empowering them and filling them with confidence. And all of a sudden they have an unbelievable performance. But at the same time, it has all happened so quickly. I'm not sure if he's had the time to get stuck into the next Loosehead prop and make them one of the better players on a Thursday night in Paris. You know, so it'll be very interesting. I think Jeremy Lochman is an interesting one because his profile suits what Ireland tried to do, but at the same time he's kind of been in and out, hasn't he, and injury and hasn't had a clear run at it. And you know, scrummaging would be questioned at some stage, especially like I said, away in France. But the ball playing, the skill level that he has would be quite up there. But it's really a toss of a coin. Like, I think even from a tight head perspective, like you're looking at Clarkson, Tom O'Toole, Scott Wilson is around you know, what side of the scrum he can play on. I don't know the ins and outs of whether they can play either side, but there are kind of players you can use there. But like, you know, we've been through it there. It does worry you when you kind of say it out loud what Ireland are missing. I know it's exciting, but it would worry you too.
Yeah, I think Jack Boyle's a good player. My worry is that he doesn't come true. You know, my worry is that he gets injured again, or if he plays on Saturday, or he doesn't make it back, then obviously you're losing a lot of players that you've been putting a lot of time into.
Yeah, I think if he is still rehabbing that shoulder injury, though, I reckon in the last couple of days he has been enthusiastic in that gym getting it done. Because for a player like him, who he seemed like the next cab off the rank from Andrew Porter this time 12 months ago, and then Paddy McCarthy explodes onto the scene, Jack Ball doesn't get a minute in November. He's probably starting to feel a little bit sorry for himself maybe. And then he gets hit with an injury around this time as well. But if he does gets through and he gets back on the pitch this weekend and puts in a good showing, there's a phenomenal opportunity for him to make an impression with Ireland in this Six Nations.
Yeah, and he has the talent. He's a very, very talented player. Just, as you say, a little bit unlucky. Paddy McCarthy got his opportunity at the start of the season. Paddy McCarthy is obviously proven himself to be a little bit different, a little bit special as well. So Boyle's just in a very competitive spot, but just this little window, it looks like if he can get fit himself, he has a chance to show what he can do.
On Leinster and La Rochelle's game at the weekend, just what a match to get the pulse racing. It was a tonic. It really was this time of year. Had everything. Leinster race into the lead, get reeled back in. Even Leo Cullen was saying after the match, he was starting to feel like 2023 all over again at the Aviva Stadium. Looks like La Rochelle are slowly winning that arm wrestle, but butchering a few chances. Then they do get into the lead. It looks like they have worn them down. Leinster punched back two tries in about 4 minutes, and then La Rochelle look like they've stolen it at the end. And then up steps Harry Byrne. Johnny, it was an absolutely brilliant game of rugby, but on the tactical side of things, you were writing yesterday in your column on RT.ie, about how La Rochelle have potentially offered up a blueprint now to other teams about how to open up Leinster's defence?
Yeah, like I suppose I was trying not to be dramatic about it because I think we've probably said there's a blueprint once or twice before. But if you look at, you know, their defensive shape, and I've seen comments during the week about it's a very easy defensive shape to run against. It's absolutely not. You know, I think that's not. But when you do get in behind, if you can get in behind, all of a sudden there's chaos, you know, because they've come so far off the line or they've come off with such aggression that they have to turn. Like one of the earlier, I think, aggressive defences in the URC before it was the URC was like the Ospreys and Wales, and they were putting that into place, the Dragons. And I remember, you know, being the opposition in Munster and you'd have to race off the line. But the whole thing with Munster was you'd hit up the middle, make as fast ruck as you can because they're still retreating and you move the ball. But I think La Rochelle, interestingly, went one different in that they moved the ball before there was a ruck. And I don't know if it was intentional or not because it didn't start that way. And then they got their 2 tens on the pitch through injury. And that's just the way the game went, whether they tried to or not, that's what they did. And it was a mixture of backs and forwards. So, you know, hitting contact, maybe getting through and then turning and popping or turning and ripping to other people. There was a lot of contact skills in it actually, which is very interesting. But yeah, moving the ball before there was a ruck means that defenders can't get set and get off the line. Normally we're talking about ruck speed. You know, the longer the ruck speed, the more the defence is set and they can get off the line and pick their man and their tackle skills are better. But when there's no ruck, you're chasing shadows. And I thought it was a very interesting approach that others might take. And I think, to be honest with you, you probably take that approach more if you don't think you can win the arm wrestle. Mm-hmm. So better teams may not use it, but lighter teams probably would. Not to say that, you know, some teams might get into the arm wrestle because they think they can get into that arm wrestle and maybe lose. But if you're looking to tear up the script, I think you would move them around quite a bit. But just before I finish speaking, Tommy O'Brien was class. I think he's been class for a long time now. He's nailed on for Ireland, isn't he, in that spot. But he was a big game breaker for Leinster too.
Yeah, he certainly was. And like couple of those angles are running, even the one for Josh van der Fleer's try, it was his one. I know it was even a couple of phases beforehand on the other side of the pitch, but it was just that angle to come back in towards the touchline, which just narrowed everyone up in defence ever so slightly and made that space out wide.
Yeah, and it's something I don't remember seeing him do that this season for Leinster. Like I think he's in such a vein of confidence now, he's just looking to get on the ball, and he nearly line breaked, but as you say, he just shortened that defensive line, maybe another body, and that allowed the space on the outside. In the end, the difference between the two teams was Leinster's ability to scramble and La Rochelle's inability to scramble, because Leinster had so few chances. It was like pure dominance from La Rochelle. It feel like, I know Leinster got a lot of 22 entry points statistically, but it didn't feel like that. It felt like La Rochelle were the ones firing more shots. But whenever they did make that line break, bar the mess up by Wardy, which, you know, an open goal from him, the other times Leinster scramble across the field was phenomenal. And then obviously you saw for the Van der Fleer and Henshaw try, there was no backfield cover at all. La Rochelle were completely disorganized. So Leinster, while they were very narrow in defence, they always had the backfield covered. But obviously, you can't give a team that many line breaks. Look at La Rochelle. And in fairness, unfortunately for them, the reason they're so inconsistent is that they sometimes lack a little bit of that energy. But when they keep the ball alive, KBA, as Roger says, it's the worst thing for Leinster's defence, because as Johnny said, Leinster's defence is based around a ruck, getting set off a ruck and creating another ruck and making that a mess. But they a little offload, a little bit of footwork was just causing all kinds of problems for Leinster, and they looked at the six and sevens. So, and also, let's be honest, La Rochelle aren't the best attack in this competition. They're a good side, but there's way more firepower out there. So it's a nice warning shot for Leinster, and they learn a lesson, hopefully without having lost points.
Johnny, go for it.
Yeah. Sorry, you know, I've gotten across here, but like it felt like they missed a couple of open goals, though. I know the Wardy one was the main one, but they really, like, they must have had two or three 22 meter entries where one pass was a try, and mm-hmm. they just couldn't stick that last pass. Ironically, all I'm saying about their kind of attacking skills and their contact skills and moving the ball was all really good out the pitch. And then one last pass inside in the 22. Also, I think it's probably a bit ironic that Sam Prendergast got such a had such a vital kind of a double moment, a repeated effort. He had a tackle, I think, as someone went through when he was in the backfield, and then he
Davinuku.
scrambled back and he started the Maul turnover. He had a tap tackle before that on Skelton, I think. So, like, for all the criticism on his defence, and he did miss a couple of tackles in the game, but for all the criticism, that was actually the moment that stopped the momentum. If La Rochelle had gone two scores, I thought it was game over, and that was the one that stopped it, turned the momentum. That led to the Robbie Henshaw or the Van der Fleer breakaway try, I think, after, like, it was huge transition time, and La Rochelle looked like they wanted to do that, but they were running out of gas, and Van der Fleer certainly didn't. And then the one thing before you move on from La Rochelle that I'd be dis if you were Rog and you had, I think there was a goal line dropout on 79 minutes, they caught the ball, were easy entry from a goal line dropout into the opposition half, and once you're in their half, you keep the ball. Knock on from their sub prop, name escapes me, but that turned into, instead of just leaving it, get it turned into a scrum, and there's a minute to set your defence. They tried to stop that ball coming back, turn into a penalty, which is actually the right call from a referee. I hate when teams are more cynical on the advantage and they get away with it. So that was a penalty down into the corner. Same player with a no arms tackle or flying off his feet or whatever it was, and Harry Byrne here heroics step up. But like, they should never ever have gotten to the stage where Harry Byrne got a penalty to win the game.
Just when you were blaming a prop there for a knock on, Johnny, I just want to quickly go back to the Reda Wardy and Antoine Astoy mix up to bring you back to your days. You're the out half in that situation. You're Astoy. There's a lovely little open goal dropped in front of you, and a loose head prop muscles his way in and spills the ball and takes it out of your hands. What are the conversations like on the pitch?
Hard luck, no fault. No, you absolutely murder him, I'd say. Do you get out of my way? Lying in your,
ironically, Wardy is someone that Rogers, he's a very good player.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's been quite a bit of tension, I think, between him and the club and him and Rog. He was dropped for a while. His form wasn't good. He's under contract next season, but my understanding is, from what I read in the Olympic, that La Rochelle are actually going to let him go, and then he has a chance basically to, you know, potentially help them win the game, and he just makes him a mess of it. It's just funny how, you know, some of the off-field things can affect an active skill in a bad way, you know. But I thought, you know, he spoke about the La Rochelle young prop coming on and having an absolute nightmare, and he's not that young, but you know, Jerry.
Yes, I'm glad you brought it up.
But like,
what a moment!
My understanding is that, you know, Paddy McCarthy and Tom Clarkson were going to play 80, if they possibly could. Clarkson obviously did, and credit to him. Obviously, Paddy McCarthy gets that injury and has to come off. But you know, at that stage, you're La Rochelle or your Leinster management, you're going, no, we're under the pump here, and we have an AIL prop coming in against a big top 14 pack. But I thought he was absolutely superb, and it's a great story. You know, he's working for Vodafone in sales. I did something with Gary Ringrose pre-match because he's injured, obviously, and he was just saying like how I suppose how interesting it is to have someone like him who's a good character who's actually doing a day job. You know what I mean? For lads who are in a bubble of just playing professional rugby. And absolutely delighted he was getting his chance. Obviously, at the time they thought he was just on the bench, but then he comes on and has a fairly big role. And you'd imagine he's involved this weekend. Apparently, Vodafone are ringing him, seeing what's he going to do. Is he working for them, or is he a pressure room player now? But like after what we saw with Connor Bartley earlier on in the year, I think more than ever, it's amazing because like this is the kind of story that happened at the start of professionalism.
Yeah.
You know, whether we weren't sure how many players you needed to have contracted. There was lots of dipping and dabbing from club rugby back. And we're now, whatever, 28, 29 years in. I know that there's been cuts to squads or whatever, but the scene likes of Bartley, seen the likes of, you know, Sirocco last year, Ivan Sirocco, and now obviously Jerry get a chance. It's brilliant.
And Johnny, like, even from your point of view, I imagine, through Cork On, you've crossed paths with Gerry Kerr either for Lansdowne in the last couple of seasons or Dublin University before that as well. I'm sure you can speak to the kind of player he is.
Yeah, I've come across him, what I still call Trinity, and Lansdowne in the last couple of years. I've seen plenty of him. Like, he's very strong. And I think you'd wonder how his scrummaging would get on at the very top level, and he's answered that question, I think. So it's great to see. It's great for the league. It's great for other players within the league. But one of our own players went up to Dublin for a year and played in Lansdowne with him and spoke really highly of him, actually. And also, I would have been asking him questions before this weekend when he got back into when he got into Leinster, and he would have spoken really highly of him. So I think it just goes to show the players aren't that far away. Like I'm not flat out here going, oh, AIL is the best league in the world, but like the some part of that AIL is very, very close to professional rugby. Not everyone, by the way, because we have to be objective, but there's players in that league that are hidden talents that can do a job at the professional game. There are only a certain amount of spots, obviously, and not everyone can do it. But I think if you're wondering can a provincial professional step into the Irish squad and do a job in Paris, then that's also true for the leagues below that can step into the professional game as well. And I think it does give everyone life that I know there's AIL clubs around the country, like they might stop at a pub on the way home on a bus journey or whatever, and one of their own players is inside in a URC game, and there's a lot of pride in that, like, but I'm sure there would have been a lot of pride in Lansdowne with Gerry Kerr stepping into a Champions Cup game of that level.
And Bersic, I'm sure it's a what a fillip it is for players all around the country. There are probably a handful of tight heads around the country who've propped against Gerry Kerr in an AIL match and gone, do you know what, I thought I did all right that day.
Yeah.
I thought it was all right. And
show me
and
a prop who didn't think he did okay.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but they're seeing him going up against Weenie Atonio with Will Skelton packing down behind him. What a boost of confidence that is for players up and down the country.
Honestly, I think this has been great for the league as well. The league's already booming. Like the quality of rugby is better than ever. But seeing some of their, I suppose, colleagues or opposition being able to go in and play in front of 40,000 people in a crucial important group game against household names, it's phenomenal.
We'll move it on. There's a bridge to use here now between Leinster and Munster, and that's discipline.
Yeah.
We spoke about it last week around Joe McCarthy's yellow card against Connacht. He had another this week. I know people might think it was a little bit harsh. It was 40 metres out and he was only slightly offside, but it was an accumulation. It was 10 penalties for Leinster in that first half and a yellow card was inevitable. Munster had two yellows at the weekend. 14 of Toulon's 27 points came during Tadhg Byrne's yellow card. He also had that yellow card against Bath for the team shipped three tries, including the penalty try from his indiscretion. Alex Nankivell at the weekend also got a very, very avoidable yellow card for just trying to grab the ball out of a scrum half's hand while he was on the ground, which killed momentum as Munster were getting back into it. I know there was an incredibly harsh penalty that went against Munster to ultimately decide the game, but I don't think you can talk about that penalty at the end of the match, which decided it, without talking about giving away two yellow cards, during which time Toulon scored more than half their points.
Yeah, well, this ill-discipline nearly cost Leinster and ill-discipline cost Munster.
And this has been going back with Ireland.
Going back, yeah.
But this has been an Ireland issue as well, so it's a fairly broad topic.
Yeah, I actually think probably the only one who'd be happy about this weekend is Andy Farrell, because it gives him a far better chance of laying down the law when they come in, because it'll be fresh in their minds of the impact it's had on the game. Because behaviour hasn't been changing. Like, there's no doubt that Ireland and Andy Farrell were talking about the importance of discipline and how it's got out of hand at provincial level, and it drifted into the Irish team all through November as well.
22 cards in the last 22 games.
Yeah, like it's been gradual and then consistent. It's gradual how it started, but now it's been incredibly consistent. The issue, I would say, is that a lot of the players aren't being held to account at provincial level for that ill-discipline. Like, go back to the Joe Schmidt days where he showed penalties that you gave away that weren't penalised, and they started to cut them out, whereas I think now even some of the ones that we've been giving away it's just part of the game, or we didn't concede from it. Finding excuses and reasons for why ill-discipline isn't that critical towards winning. So Leinster and Munster, like, it wasn't fatal. Munster still have a chance.
Yeah,
Leinster are still in a great position, but they're going to have to stop that, because there's no chance you'll be winning silverware or from Ireland or Munster or Leinster if you continue to concede, I would say, stupid penalties like and yellow cards like we're doing.
And Johnny, if I'm talking about Tadhg Byrne here, like, obviously there's a bit of self-awareness there that how many times over the last few years we've seen Tadhg Burn coming up with incredibly unlikely turnovers in his 22, where he's had to take a massive risk and go in for a ball, and sometimes maybe he's got away with them, and you know he's been, but the cloak of invisibility is slightly wearing off. I am very, very conscious of that, and maybe this weekend we'll see him come off with a couple of them. But it's trying to balance that risk and reward of when to go for something and when to take an opportunity. But also then as well to look at something like Alex Nankivell's yellow card, which was you just were not going to get away with that at any stage of the game.
Yeah, the Alex Nankivell one is the bigger outlier because it's just absolutely brained it. Like he was, if you see his reaction when he's leaving the field, I hope it's at himself. You know, he's shaking his head and stuff. And obviously he's like, you know, the way the laws are now with the nines, you know, that was a penalty and a yellow card before. Now they're so sensitive around the nines that it's way worse. You know, you're never going to get away with that. So that one is just brain dead from a player that probably knows he's done it. The Tadhg Burn one, I just wonder, is he gone into a stage now where obviously he makes big plays, and that cloak of invisibility has been around him a bit, but does he think he needs to do something big now for the team all the time, because he is their best player, most recognised player, you know, Lions tours and player of the tournament and all that kind of stuff. People are relying on him, and then maybe you do get away with a small bit because he gets such big turnovers. Sometimes you do wonder how it's legal, but he has such big plays that he's just kind of caught in that routine of making big plays, and then a certain referee will catch him for every one of those things that's illegal. Like, you know, so he's had a couple of cards recently, which I think he does need to stamp out. Joe McCarthy, similar. I think that when he started his career and he was kind of breaking onto the scene, he played on the edge. You know, he brings that energy, and he was getting penalised. And then I thought his biggest improvement was his discipline. He was really good fitting into the system, making big plays without kind of standing out too much for the wrong reasons. And he's probably slipping back into that as well, isn't he? So two very important players for their club and country, but they're starting to get on the radar. And once you're on the radar, referees speak. And obviously now the game is, you know, everyone can see the game anyway. They'll watch it and go, geez, he's annoying me because he keeps getting into my way. He keeps making me make decisions, and refs don't really want to make decisions, besides the last one in the Munster game, which I thought could have been let go, but I know you don't want to talk about that one too much.
Yeah, like obviously there's a lot of nuance with players like McCarthy and Tadhg Burn where you don't want them to take that element out of their game too much, because then they actually just lose the chunk of the player that makes them what they are. It's just trying to find the balance between the two. I do want to move it on though, because we still have a couple of bits to get through. On Munster, showed plenty of fight, all things considered. And while a win really, really slipped by, the losing bonus point, they battled incredibly hard in those last couple of minutes to save, ultimately could be what gets them through to the round of 16, or even gets them a home draw in the round of 16, depending on how things go. I won't go into all the permutations here because there are way too many. I picked out the key ones on RT.ie this morning. But the simple situation this weekend, they can't lose. If they lose, they're gone. If they draw, they're taking some big chances if they want to qualify. Bizarrely, with this pool, they could win with a bonus point and get a home game in the round of 16. They could also be eliminated this weekend if they win with a bonus point. So much depends on what way those other games go across the pool. Craig Casey's shoulder injury, thankfully, isn't as bad as first feared. And also hard to know what kind of a team Cast will bring over, because I think there's a little bit of an assumption they'll bring over a second string team, but they are also away from home in the top 14 the following week, and they have a good chance of qualifying.
Yeah, I watched them. I was on the game against Bath live. They're only okay. They're only okay at the moment. I would say it'd be a mixed team. I think if Munster go after them, they'll walk out the door. Honestly, are Munster able to now? So I thought it was a very well executed game plan in terms of containment and just play transition attack. But obviously now you're at home, the mindset changed a little bit. You got to maybe provoke a little bit more. So are Munster able to repeat that? Obviously, you potentially had a bit of a backlash from the Ulster game. You get a better performance, you know. But what was your mindset like, and what was your emotional state like to get that against a team like Toulon, who are, you may be a bit of fear that if you don't perform, you're gonna ship a hiding, which obviously they didn't do, and we're looking at to win it. So I think for Clayton's point of view, McLean's point of view, it's just, you know, he said he's going to pick his best team. Obviously, there's no doubt he will do that. Does he know his best team in all areas? You know, Saturday or last Sunday would have hoped that he endorse some of those selections, but can they go on and be absolutely ruthless and go and get 5 points? I think that'd be a huge turnaround, and just get them on a really good footing heading into 2026.
Yeah, I will point out, I know I said they could be eliminated with a winning bonus point. That is a very, very extreme scenario of high scoring games elsewhere where each team is getting, you know, bonus points and a losing bonus point for someone and a try scoring bonus point. It's a fairly mad scenario. Bonus points should be enough to get through at the very least. It has the makings of an incredibly interesting Champions Cup knockout stages as well, because Leinster, even if they get a bonus point this weekend, might not be enough to actually get a one of the top two seeds. So if they're playing in a semi-final, they could be playing away from home. We'll have to see how it goes. Toulouse, we're pretty sure now, they're going to be one of the mid-ranked teams. Yeah. So you could be at home. Someone could be at home against the Toulouse in a quarter-final, which will shake things up. There's a few wrinkles in there which we haven't really seen in previous years. We're kind of used to the, you know, Leinster and Toulouse probably at home in semi-finals and everyone kind of being able to judge the path off that.
Yeah, well, Toulouse away, like having a high ranking and having to play Toulouse at home is some stinger, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not much for a reward.
People say, oh, well, they lost two games. But look, I've no doubt that come the knockout stages, Toulouse will be contenders. And if they have to go away, they're still good enough to do that, and they know that. So that's a shocker. Stormers, by sending a second string to Quinns, they obviously got hammered. They've a home game this weekend, but like they'll end up having to travel somewhere. And again, you wouldn't want to face them fully loaded either. So there's only probably five or six teams who can win this, but they're not going to. I think some of them will run into each other in around 16 or quarterfinals.
Yeah, it does make things interesting. We'll finish up talking John Klein, Johnny, because confirmed yesterday, I think it was kind of expected this season was going to be his last, but confirmed John Klein to leave Munster at the end of the season. About 160 games, 10 seasons, one of the best imports a province has made. And given the way his international career went with Ireland and the sliding doors moment of him not getting another Ireland cap and opening up that window for him to return to the Springbok jersey, winning a World Cup and then becoming a non-Irish qualified player off the back of it. Like, you'd have to say one of the most important players in general in Irish rugby across the last 10 years, just given the way that has gone. I would say if Brendan Fanning is writing a third edition of his Irish rugby kind of story in 20 years' time, John Klein is getting his own chapter.
Yeah, John Klein has been, he's actually been incredible, hasn't he, for Munster? Like, there was a time where if they didn't have John Klein, you know, their pack was just different profile altogether. And that's obviously why they brought him in the first place. He's a massive man. He makes a big impact in the tight exchanges, I would say. Obviously, we've seen, like, you know, he's not the most skillful second row that Ireland has. And maybe that held him back on the Irish international stage, but it didn't stop Razzie from bringing him back in because they like that style of player as well. So, like, you know, I'm sure there'll be the comments around the only Irish player to win a World Cup and all the rest of it, and that makes it very interesting. But he actually was a phenomenal player and still is a phenomenal player for Munster in that profile inside the pack. I think now is probably the time that they can afford for John Klein to move on. You know, I know he's got a lot of miles on the clock. I think he's got a lot of parts of his body that hurt, you know, and how much more of his career does he have left once he leaves? Now, it'll be interesting to see, but, you know, Edwin Adogbo will probably soften that blow if he can stay fit. I hope he can, because I thought he had an unbelievable game again at the weekend, showing what he can do on both sides of the ball. He's another profile that we haven't had in quite a while. And the last one probably was John Klein coming in from South Africa. So I know Ireland probably have had the luxury of not needing John Klein, and the likes of Joe McCarthy would have filled that gap and gone ahead of him. But Edwin Adogbo is probably that person for Munster that will soften the blow. But John Klein has been incredible. So I don't want to take away from that. He's been very good for Munster across the years.
Absolutely. And I was almost relieved, Bernard, to see that Munster offered him a contract and he just chose to go elsewhere with Gloucester. Because I think once he went back and played with South Africa and was no longer Irish qualified, I really, really dreaded the thought that we could get to a situation where he would be lost to Munster simply because he was a non-Irish qualified player and, you know, you're not given the dispensation to to even offer him a contract.
Yeah.
I was a little bit relieved to see that he's made the decision to leave off his own back rather than being ultimately forced out through regulations.
Yeah, and in fairness to Munster, they made that choice because they chose him over Orgy.
Yeah.
They were only out of one foreign lock, and they valued his contribution to Munster, and I think he has left like 10 years is phenomenal. You know, Gloucester have offered him a 3-year, is my understanding, so that's a big statement, particularly given you know the miles on the clock and how he plays, etc. So I think from a playing point of view for him, like from a security point of view, the 3-year contract is a massive a business decision wise. There's no choice. You just got to go at Gloucester. And also, to be fair to Munster, I can see why they wouldn't offer a 3-year. You know, particularly with a Dogbo coming through. But I think Munster will sign Ulton Delan. As a replacement,
hot off the Jackman press.
Yeah, I'd imagine that that will happen. So then, obviously, they'd have him coming back in, Irish qualified. So again, they still have a foreign player spot. You have a Dogbo coming through, and plenty of transfer talk. I mean, Jack Ainger's talking to Munster, Matthew Devine's talking to Munster, as he is, I think, Ulster. I think both are talking to Ulster and Munster at the moment. I think Connaughton linked with Van Dijk, the Bath loose head, South African loose head.
Ulster and Eli...
Yeah, they've signed him first. They've got a lock. They needed a lock.
Lot of movement at the moment.
Lot of movement, yeah. But like, I think Delan coming back to Irish rugby would be interesting. You know what I mean? Very good athlete. Obviously had experience. And he's not a like for John Klein, obviously. They're very different, but it'd be good to see him and obviously Carby are two, I suppose, players who are playing in top 14 coming home.
Delan qualified for France yet at this stage? Is his few years up?
Yeah.
Fabien Galthié go in and just give him a cap in the Six Nations, do a Razzie on it.
I think he'd be back in Ireland without playing for France.
Very good, Johnny. Anything else to say before we finish up? I think we've covered a lot today.
Joe Joyce actually. Gloucester have signed Joe Joyce as well.
Oh, okay.
So that's Joe Joyce and John Klein too. Which is interesting.
And Jack Morgan and
they're
doing a serious bit of business for next season, right? Gloucester, they're the ones to look out for next season. We'll leave it there, folks. Live commentary on Munster and Cast, part 20, live on RT Radio 1 on Saturday Sports this weekend. Bernard and Johnny, thanks a million for joining us. And we will be back next week. Speak to you again soon.